Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
But what you may not know is that in addition to this podcast, we also host two live races in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that are designed to do the same.
The first is the Final Countdown, which takes place on September 16th. And whether you've never run before or you're a hardcore ultra veteran, this race is designed to help you find your limits. And we'll be there to help celebrate with you.
And we have now opened registration for the Hydra, which will take place on April 20th and has a 50K individual, a 50K relay, and a half marathon option. Whatever option you choose, we promise that slaying the Hydra will be unlike any race you've ever experienced.
All right, so mark your calendars, share with your friends, and visit us at theultrarunningguys.com or check out the links in the show notes for more info.
And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up.
On TikTok, it's like every time I post a video, it's like 15-year-old kids arguing about, he's like Goggins. No, he's not. Goggins is way tougher than him. No, he's tougher than Goggins. No, Goggins carries the logs. No, Andy carries the boats. Like, it's like literally this crazy, like, I'm always compared to Goggins. And I'm like, guys, I'm not Goggins. Goggins is amazing, like, whatever. Like, but it's just these people just fight. And then they're like, next thing I know, my video has like 10 million views, you know? So,
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And as always, for the Ultra Running Guys family, we're so grateful that you're taking the time. If you're finding the value, share with your friends, give us the review, give us the rating, all the fun stuff. But as always, we're going to jump straight to the guest. I am so excited about this. So our guest tonight is as epic as they come. He's only the second repeat guest that we've ever brought on the show. And when we had him on last in early 2021, he was logging 1,000-mile months. Yes,
a lot.
Yes, you heard that right. And we've had the pleasure of watching him continue to inspire daily, both through his incredible endurance feats, as well as simply sharing his authentic self through his social media channels. As of this recording, he just hit 178 straight weeks of logging 100 plus miles a week. It's nearly 3.5 years.
That's good math.
And that's
almost there.
And that's despite a seemingly endless number of races and events, including what he calls the Coco Canyons Challenge, which included running the Canyons 100 miler beginning on a Friday and moving straight into the Cocodona 250 miler beginning on Monday with a single day of recovery. So wrap your head around that. And even though he exhibits Goggins-like discipline in his training and lifestyle, he proudly lives out his motto of smile or you're doing it wrong. And with that, please welcome back to the show, our friend, Andy Glaze.
Thank you. And technically, this is my third time on here.
That's right.
That's true. Yeah,
so am I the first triple?
No.
No. Dang.
But so you're only our second repeat guest, but you're right. This is your third appearance. Because we did. Right. There was so much content. In the beginning, we actually knew before we ever had you on that we wanted 2 episodes. You're the only person we've done that with, aside from...
That's not true. Steve had 5 in a row at the beginning.
Steve, if you're listening, we love you.
Yeah, so, well, yeah.
Man, we've got a lot to talk about. Even when we messaged you on this, you said, hey, look, this is just going to be old friends catching up. It's definitely what it feels like. Your growth, all the incredible things you're doing, it is inspiring. Like I told you, I went on to your link tree. And we'll talk about it going out, but AM Glaze, I'm sure everybody listening to this is already following you on Instagram or TikTok, but your link tree, I went on there, man, there's so many articles and podcasts. You've just got a ton of incredible content. However, if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you'll see those first 2 Ultra Running Guys episodes. I highly recommend, if this is your first introduction to Andy, go listen to those or any of the other great content out there. And we're definitely not going to have time to cover it all.
No way. There's just too many things to talk about.
But let's assume that this is somebody's first time getting to know you. So okay. Andy Glaze, firefighter, father, husband. One of the first questions that's going to come to mind is why so much running?
I mean, just on the very basic level, I love running. And, you know, when you get to be an old man, you get to do things that you love to do, might as well be happy. So obviously it's become like a way bigger thing because, you know, it's just part of my lifestyle now. And it's part of my routine. It's part of everything. At the very core, I just love to run. As I would think most people listening to this podcast also love to run. So
100%. And when you say an old man, let's be honest, you're what, 45, I think?
Yeah, 45.
So that's not really old. I mean, I'm a tad bit older than you. But how do you make running then? Because you're in your 40s, you have a full-time job, like you said at the beginning, you have a family and everything. How do you make running such a priority? Because again, having a 178 weeks of 100 miles per week, at least 100 miles, most of them are mid 100, like 100 to 150, closer to that. How do you make it still a priority?
I'm very routined. Like I wake up and I do like the same thing every morning. I don't even really think about it as like, it's not like, not something that's like a conversation in my head, like, oh, should I go for a run? It's just what I do. I guess it's part of that whole consistency thing. You know, people talk about occasionally, you know, you'll stare at your shoes and you're like, oh, I don't want to get out the door. Normally for me, that's like, if the weather is like really terrible, you know, like it's been over like 105, 104 in my area lately. And it's like, I might drag a little bit to get out the door in those situations, or if it's like just torrential downpour or something like that. But beyond that, it's just like, it's just part of my routine. I wake up, I eat breakfast. I, you know, I have a whole like routine I do. And then I put on my running shoes and get out the door, and I wake up super early. So it's like, I'm running while everybody's asleep. And, you know, I like to watch the sunrise and do the whole thing. So, I've been doing it for so long that it doesn't feel weird, and it doesn't feel like a chore. It doesn't feel like it's forced or anything like that. It just feels like my life. Just as like, how do you remember, or like, how do you motivate to eat lunch every day? You just eat lunch, right? I mean, it's like, you're hungry, it's lunchtime. And so you go eat lunch. I mean, that's just my morning and my evening. When it comes to that certain time, I just know I have to go for a run.
It's fascinating to me because I realized when I asked the question and listening to you respond, it's so normal for you that it's almost a odd question to be asked. Like, how is it a priority? Like, it's just what I do. Like, it's like eating. That's not a priority. I just do it.
Right.
And just listening to it, it's so nonchalant because it's not an extracurricular. It's part of the curricular, if that makes sense.
It's just my day. It's just like literally like what I do and who I, uh-huh, and everything. I mean, there's no like real conversation other than that. So
let me ask this, because it's one of two things. Either you're just always that way or you've developed that, right? And so for everybody listening, you say you wake up early, and we talked about it in our early episodes, but early is like 2:30, right? So it's early, early. And so I want people to recognize that it's not just like, oh, I roll out of bed at 5, you know, and jumpstart the day.
5 is early.
I've gotten to like more like 3:30. I'm back to 3:30 now because I'm not running. But when we talked last time and I was running 1,000 mile months, I was having to run like 30 something miles a day,
right,
which, you know, and sometimes I was doing 40, you know, a day. And so I needed that extra hour to get extra miles. But now that I'm only running like 20 something miles a day, I don't quite need to wake up as early.
Okay.
And
just
then,
20, yeah, just get that extra sleep in until 3:30. Well, so one of the things that I really enjoy about you, man, because you put out a ton of content, but you've always said, or I've seen you say several times, stuff like, hey, I'm an expert in Andy, right? And so I feel like you almost even pull away from giving advice sometimes because you're like, hey, I'll point you to coaches, or if you're a coach, comment here, that type of thing. So I'm interested to see how you answer this, because for you, like you said, it's just how you operate. It doesn't feel like having to do discipline, probably the way it does for me when I wake up in the morning. I'm like, gosh, I do have those conversations still that you were saying, like, you really don't, right? So if somebody asks you, hey, how did you, or what would your advice be for me in starting to develop discipline? What would your recommendations be for the first few steps? Or do you have anything that comes to mind?
I sort of focused it on my accounts, but like, make like lots of small goals. Mondays are my favorite day of the week. You know, it's a fresh start. You know, we have 52 weeks in a year. So if you break each week up as like specific goals, then it's easier to build on them. And then over time, you'll build that consistency. And like, if you make it into smaller goals like that too, then if you have a bad week, it's not such like a big deal. Like everybody has bad weeks. So it's like you have a bad week, Monday comes again, it's a fresh start. Now we're starting fresh again, and we're going to like try to make this week better. Last week's in the past. Let's not worry about last week. Let's focus on today, tomorrow, the next day. Let's get through these 7 days. You know, again, if that week sucks, whatever. It's a Monday's a fresh start again. And we just like in my mind, it's we're just always moving forward. So if you're like, you know, trying to build discipline or, you know, come up with like ways to get better, it's just like that always that constant movement of forward, not really focusing on the past or what you did last week. I mean, you might have had a great week last week, too. That's awesome. But we still have this week ahead of us. And it's like the same as like in an ultra, you know, you got 100 miles. And I always like think aid station to aid station. So you could think of that as your like your small micro goals. And it's like you get to that aid station, you eat, you drink, you refill your water, whatever you need to do. And then you're on to the next aid station. It doesn't really matter what just happened. Now we have a new goal. We're moving forward. And even if you walk from aid station to aid station, like you're still moving forward. You're still getting closer and closer to that finish line with every step. I guess the long answer to that short question is small goals that just build on each other. And then, you know, after a long period of time, you look back and you're like, oh my God, I've been running 20 miles a week for a year now, you know, and you can see all the progress you've made. But in the moment, you're only running 20 miles in that 1 week period. You're not focused on the week in the future or the week in the past.
The one thing when you were talking that hit me, and I think I've heard it several times, but every time I hear somebody talk that's really good at discipline, it's always process related. It's not like, you set goals, but it sounds like it's not about meeting the goal as much as it is the constant restart. Okay, got it. Move on to the next step in the process. It's not, you know, if even if it's weight loss, it's not lose 40 pounds. It's do what I need to every day. And if I didn't do it, just restart the next day. That's your deal, right? Like,
I mean, everybody has bad days. Everybody has busy days. Life, I always say life gets in the way all the time. It always is getting in the way. And, you know, if you beat yourself up, you know, what is that really going to accomplish? You know, just the next day, start fresh. The next week, start fresh. Like, you know, just as long as you're continually trying to improve, trying to like move forward and trying to set those goals, like you'll get there. It just like everything, it takes time. There's no shortcut to discipline. There's no shortcut to getting better. There's no shortcut to losing weight. There's no shortcut to getting better at running. You know, it just takes hard work and, you know, time.
So I know I asked this question before last time we talked. I'm almost positive I did, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When I look at the 100-mile weeks that you're having and everything, it's not like you just say, once I get to 100, I can be done. It's I'm just running and they just happen to compound and these are the numbers I get to. So are you setting out to get 100 each week or is that the ultimate goal or do you care what it is as long as it's 100 and over?
I mean, at this point, I just run. Right. And like if I get 130 one week, cool. If, you know, there's only been a couple weeks in the 3 years where I've gotten like really close and I actually got really sick like last month and it was a really, really hard 100 miles to get to the point where I told my wife, like, I don't know if I'm going to make it this like week. Cause it was like, I was sleeping like 18 hours a day, just like really, really sick, but you know, I somehow got it done. But yeah, in general, like it's not, the 200 mile weeks were hard, but like normally the 100 mile weeks aren't that challenging in the sense I only need to run 15 miles a day to get it. I run twice a day. So if I just want to do the bare minimum, I run 10 miles in the morning and 5 miles in the evening. So that's 15 miles. And like, to me, that's super easy to accomplish. Like it's, I don't even, that's not something that even stresses my body. I mean, sometimes I like to like ramp up, like right now, like I was sick. So like, the week I was sick, I only got like 106 miles. And then the next week I was still not feeling 100% and I got like 111. Then the next week I got 120. Then the next week I got 130. And then this week I got like 147. So, I mean, I like to progress up like that if I go back down low. Mm-hmm. But then once I find a sweet spot, like around 150 or something, I'll just kind of like stay there. Right now I have a big race coming up with a lot of vert. And so I need to start transitioning and doing more like vertical climbing and less miles. So I'll probably probably start that tomorrow or the next day, try to like get more into like high vert, low miles, but still, you know, obviously be above 100.
Yeah, I know we're about to move to another topic, but just to kind of close this out, I was doing a little bit of Strava trolling. I think it was yesterday. We were prepping for this. And I think for listeners who may not know you or may not be following you on Strava, it's one thing to say I run, you know, 10 miles and 5 miles in a given shot twice a day or whatever it is. And if they're looking at their own paces, they're thinking, well, you know, he must be running 7 minute miles or 8 minute miles to squeeze all this time in. And you're not. I mean, you're running, most of them are going to be around 11 to 12 and a half minutes per mile. And your heart rate is a zone one or zone two, zone one. There was one that was almost all zone one. I was like, how is he not, his heart's not even beating for 10 miles. But the point is that he's super low heart rate and super easy pace for him. And I think if you're listening, you're thinking, well, there's no way I can do, you know, 15 miles a day. And as slow as I am, you know, it's not that Andy's coming here just rocketing through the miles as fast as he possibly can and getting them done. You're outside, you're spending time, low heart rate, and enjoying the time outside. And so I think that's a common misperception that people have when they see the volume of miles that you do, is that they think you're just blazing through them really, really fast and you're some elite quick runner and you're getting them done, like I said, in 7 minute miles. And you're not. Like, you're out there and you're putting the time in as well, which is, I think, an added feature of the volume of time being spent running.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a lot of different types of runners, right? I mean, and the style of runner I am is very different for most people, because I am a like ultra runner, obviously. And, you know, I do a lot of ultras. And so for me, what I found, what works for Andy, is time on my feet and low heart rate, because when I'm doing an ultra, that is what I'm doing. So I try to mimic my training as I race, and it's worked out well for me. So I don't know if it will work out well for everybody. And I don't know, you know, I don't know other people's bodies. I'm like, I'm sure you've seen my post where I'm not a coach. I don't know anything about coaching. I've never taken any classes on it. I was never like classically trained in college or high school or anything on running. I wasn't on the cross country team. So I don't know really anything about any of that stuff. All I know is what works for me. And that's, you know, lots of time on my feet helps me. Like, I remember when I used to not spend a lot of time on my feet, like in the end of the ultras, my legs and my feet would be like so painful. They would just like hurt. And like, I don't get that anymore. Like, because my body is so used to just like hours and hours. I mean, I do like 30 something hours a week of running. So it's like, my body is like used to that, you know, constant sort of like pounding. But then again, I'm like very, very efficient in my strides and how I run and all that. So it works out.
Yeah, you are an incredibly efficient machine when you're running. Like, just looking at his data, it's impressive. It just is.
So the point I want to make there, and we had a similar conversation when we had Gags on, right, is that somebody may look and go, oh, 10, 11, 12 minute miles, that might feel slow. Except you don't slow down when you run 100, right? If I go out and I run 8 miles at 8:30 pace, I don't go run 100 at 8:30 pace. You know what I'm saying? You do. Yeah. And so that's the big difference. 11 minute miles just cruising around town may not seem fast when we go compare data. When you go run a 100 miler at 11 minute pace, then it's really fast, right? You know what I mean? So I think that that's where it translates. It's like, oh my gosh, you don't slow down. You really keep that pacing. Like, that is just your comfortable pacing.
Right. I mean, if it's like, I've done Jackpot the last 2 years and it's a pretty flat, like 100. You just do like, it's like a 1 mile loop with maybe, I don't know. I think it has a couple thousand feet of vert, like maybe 4,000 feet. You know, I've been able to maintain like, you know, low tens, like right, for 100 miles. You start throwing invert though, like, you know, it's obviously going to slow down, but yeah, it's true. Like I know there's a lot of people out there that can do it, but like me personally, I can run 100 miles. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't need to walk. I don't need to hike it. As long as it has, like, my sort of rule is if it has less than 12,000 feet of vert, then I normally can run the entire 100 miles. When you start getting north of 12,000 feet, then I might have to hike a little, some of the vert, or if it has like really, really steep stuff, obviously it's not efficient to like, you know, run that. But in general, if it, you know, it's 100 miles, less than 12,000 feet, then I can run the whole thing, which I'm proud of, because that feels like an accomplishment to me that like I can run 100 miles and not stop, and not like, I mean, obviously you stop to pee and drink water and stuff like that. But like, you know, I like that I've gotten my body to that point.
There are very, very few people who can say that. You know that. I mean, that's incredible.
But not only that, I feel like, and we've talked several times, right, man, you do things that most of us can't wrap our head around. At the same time, you're so relatable in terms of, because if people listen, like, okay, when I think of people that can run 100 miles, I immediately go to some of the elites. I mean, we talked to Hayden Hawks and he talked about running all of Western States and this and that. We know from our conversations last time, I'm guessing this hasn't changed, right? You don't do speed work.
No.
You run low heart rate mileage. You do plenty of vert, which I think probably plays a role in that. But like, you're relatable in terms of just going, oh, okay, if I do it consistently and I do it enough and I do it for a longer period of time, then it's possible. And Andy's like a very good example of that, right? So even though it's hard, I don't relate to at this moment, I don't think I can do what Andy can do. I look at you and go, oh, if I change my life around, maybe I could do what Andy could do. I'm not going to run 6 minute miles, but if I just put
neither,
more time,
neither am I.
Right. That's what I mean. Mike.
Yeah. And Andy has a full-time job.
Right. Yeah. And you have a full-time job.
That's not paid running job.
Right.
Yeah. But, well, and I think also, like, you know, one is like, you have to be physically fit, but like what I preach a lot on my socials is like, you know, the mental toughness aspect of ultras, which, you know, I think that plays a way bigger part in being successful in running an ultra than anything else. And I speak, like, obviously I still point a lot of people to our podcast that we did on failure, but, you know, I have a lot of failure. I have a lot of DNFs. I have a lot of races that didn't go well, that like, I wasn't mentally tough enough to like get through, or, you know, things happened and I tried to learn from those and build on those and change parts of my life to incorporate more mental strength training into my routine to make me stronger and better to get through the really low points in a race. And I feel like, to me, that's like my bigger success in ultras in the last couple of years, is like, I've really worked on my mental strength.
I want to come back to that when we start talking about some of your big events, because I'm sure right now there's people like, well, how is he working on that, right? Mm. So I definitely want to get some of the tactical stuff of like what that means to you. But I do want to jump. So there's a section, dude, I'm super excited, because you talked about on your socials some of the stuff that you're sharing. Well, if people are following you, they're seeing most nights, and it probably is every night, I don't know if you post it every night, but you're getting in an ice bath, you're doing sauna. I know that you're an Andrew Huberman fan, right? So you're listening to a lot of that stuff. And so I'm interested, because I don't know that was really incorporated. The first discussions we had with you were like, do you stretch? You know, like, how do you recover? You're like, I don't really do any of that, man. Like, I don't really stretch. I don't roll. Right. I don't, you know.
Yeah, I still don't.
but I do think that you're very intentional about how you treat your body. Like you said, how you're treating your mind, what you're doing. I mean, you're, when you get into the ice, I'll let you say it, but what's the thing you usually say?
Daily reminder to do hard things.
Right. So you were intentionally, you have these routines and you're moving things in. So if people don't know Andrew Huberman, I'm assuming he's been a big influence. I know you plug into his stuff a lot. Introduce him for the audience, and then what's the impact it's kind of made on you, lifestyle, running, any of that?
I mean, so he is a podcaster that is, he's a neurologist and he like is a Stanford professor. So he gives these podcasts that like break down things like very scientifically. So it's almost like you are getting a Stanford level education every time he talks about something. And you know, he talks about a variety of things, from red light therapy to, you know, cold therapy to hot therapy to, I think this week he did a whole thing on ketamine and how it can cure depression. I mean, it's very dynamic. He goes all over the place. He'll get guests on that are experts, and it's very science-based, and I have a like science-based brain, and I do really appreciate his perspective. And he gives his lecture, but then he has like, you know, all the different references on where he got his data. So it's not just like a random person giving you a bunch of stuff. Like, you can actually go read the white papers. You can read the research. He brings on the like leading experts in each field and will like interview them. If you like science stuff, which I do, It's good. I think where it kind of started, I mean, obviously I listened to Huberman, so I was like, man, that sounds good, but you know, I hate cold stuff. But I work with a Russian, and you know, he grew up in Russia doing this sort of sauna cold plunge thing. And he's also very science minded. So we, you know, both would like send Huberman episodes back and forth, and we talk about it. And finally we're like, let's get like a cold plunge at work, because where we work, we have a like a commercial ice machine. And so, you know, we talked about it, and we finally bought one, just like a Rubbermaid, you know, 100 gallon trough, which is like $100. And you know, we filled it up with ice and water and like started doing it. And you know, it was just an amazing experience. I mean, it was terrible, but like I have never felt like better afterwards. Like you just get like you just feel so happy. And I really like appreciate like I don't want to do it. And I like that I never ever want to get in that thing. I don't. You know, I will run outside, it'll be 105 degrees, and I will come inside and I will be so hot, and I'll look in that thing and I'll be like, I don't want to get in this. Like, I don't, you know, even though I'm like so hot, like I still never, every day, I never want to get in it. And I get in and I'm like, oh my God, it is so cold. And then like your body starts doing all this crazy stuff, and you got to like control your breathing and like, you know, focus and everything. But I like that. I like, you know, for me, it is my daily hard thing is because I really don't want to do it. And I really don't like the cold, but I love how I feel afterwards. So, and then he had a bunch of stuff on sauna work. And I used to do sauna back in the day a lot when I would go to the gym, and I always liked sauna. And then, you know, the science between going hot, cold. And so, yeah, I got myself a cheap sauna from Costco, and you know, we've just been going back and forth between the sauna and the cold plunge, and it's, man, it feels so good. It is like the best feeling ever. Has it helped with recovery? Like, maybe. You know, I think those are like, you know, I'm always sore. I always am broke off, but like, I've had like one of the biggest race years ever that I've ever had, and was able to do all these crazy things. And obviously, I've incorporated a lot of heat and cold training into that, and so maybe it played a role, maybe it didn't, but at the end of the day, it's definitely helped me with my like mental toughness, and also I like mental health. It does give you a very like large dopamine rush, which you know is like the kind of the happy drug. I mean, it makes you feel good. It's almost like taking like, you know, Prozac or something. Not that I've taken Prozac, but how they describe it, you know, it does make you feel happy. Yeah, I'm obsessed, and you know, I obviously it's always on my social, and I think I've turned quite a few people, like I would guess thousands of people, onto it, because I get a lot of messages and stuff. And I haven't had anybody hit me up and say like, man, why did you have me do that? It was terrible. You know, I mean, everybody ends up like really enjoying it and incorporating it into their, you know, routine.
Yeah, so one of the things I think is super interesting. So biohacking has been like this term that gets thrown around, right? And if anybody's listening, they're like, I don't quite understand what that means or why people do these different things. I mean, biohacking is essentially just the effort is to understand our biology and then to do things that cause either a change in our biology or our bodies to have responses based off of that stimulus to usually have some kind of positive thing, right? And a lot of times you'll hear the people doing that going, hey, we used to get chased by woolly mammoths and we had these different things. And so our bodies are wired a certain way. We don't have that anymore. However, we can simulate some of this stuff, breath work, cold work, sauna, you know, it's all these different biohacking. Like you said, it's not just a matter of, hey, it makes me feel tougher, but the science will say that it actually changes your body chemistry and your biology in a manner that has been proven for mental health and mental toughness and these different things. Are there any other? So we talked about kind of the cold. Do you do any kind of breath work? I'm just curious.
I do like while I'm in the cold plunge, I do like I do the two inhales and then a long exhale, which is supposed to like lower your heart rate and like relax you. So I do that as far as my breath work while I'm, you know, I try to kind of like get into like a meditative state when I'm in there. After I give my do hard things, I talk to the camera, and then I'm like, oh, this is so cold. And then I go in my little zone. It is like, that's the hardest part is talking to you guys. Like, when I'm sitting in that freezing cold water, because it's like getting punched in the face, you know? It's like, oh, but I work through it.
The things he has to do for his adoring fans.
That's right.
I'm trying to, you know, encourage people to do hard things and to, like, you know, get better. So I got to lead from the front.
I think it's good to hear it, though, because if you watch it, I mean, you just get in. It's clear that you've trained yourself to, like, regardless of what the brain is telling you, to just do, to just show up, right? And so, but you can see it in your expression sometimes when you get in, you're like, whoo, like, there we go.
Yeah.
So is there anything else, whether it's from Huberman or just anything else in your kind of daily routines? Are there any other, what I would call biohacking? Are there any other things that you've implemented that you've either found helpful, whether because you've seen specific results or not?
I mean, I take a lot of supplements. I take a variety of things. I'm always trying new things. Who knows? I mean, again, I'm not a doctor or anything. I don't know if they work or not, but I do take a large amount of, like, supplements. And I think biohacking wise, like, I don't get sick very often. Obviously, you know, with this streak, I think I've gotten sick twice in the last 3 years. I like to think that some of that has to do with, you know, the supplements I take and also, like, you know, my diet. I do some red light therapy, mostly for my eyes. I'm trying to, like, my night vision is going, and I'm trying to, like, you know, give my eyes some red light therapy to try to keep them younger. You know, who's to say how fast something degenerates, right? Like, is it working and my eyes are degenerating slower,
right?
Or is it the same? I don't know, but it's something I do. I've started taking creatine in the mornings. I do a lot of, like, gut health stuff. I eat, like, a lot of fermented foods because there's a lot of science between the gut brain barrier. And so, you know, I'm trying to keep my gut healthy, not just Huberman, but, like, there's a lot of podcasts. Rich Roll has a good one recently on gut health and the importance of maintaining a healthy gut. So that's something I put a lot of focus in, is my gut health.
Are you a kombucha fan?
No, I haven't got into kombucha, mostly just because it has a little alcohol in it and I'm just not a big drinker. I mostly do, like, kimchis and, like sauerkrauts and stuff like that. Or in the morning, I do, like, Athletic Greens, which has a little bit of probiotics in it. But, like, after a run, I always, like, eat a bunch of kimchi. It's that's, like, my after run, like, snack, which I know sounds probably terrible, but for me, I really like. I like fermented food. I like pickles and all that stuff. So my refrigerator looks like I probably have probably 8 different varieties of fermented cabbage and pickles and all sorts of stuff in there at all times. So
I think a couple of years ago it was avocado, wasn't it, that he was eating?
Oh, I still eat a lot of avocado.
Yeah, he still.
But I just planted 4 more avocado trees on my property. So now I have 7 avocado trees. So, you know, I love avocados.
You gotta be saving a fortune, man. Those
right.
things can
you can sell. Well,
unfortunately, they only produce avocados, like, twice a year. So it's like you only save a fortune, like, during those periods.
That's funny. Awesome. And that's probably when they're cheap at the stores,
because
it's avocado season.
Exactly. But I grow varieties that you can't buy in the store, so they tend to be a little tastier, just harder to peel. Yeah, like
I didn't
the
even
Haas,
know.
Yeah, the Haas avocado, if you ever want to go down the rabbit hole, there's on Netflix, there's a thing called Avocado Wars, if you Google it, and it talks about how the Haas avocado, like, because it's small and has thick skin, it's easy to ship, it, like, took over. But there's, like, a ton of varieties of avocados that are way tastier. They have, like, a higher oil percentage, so they're, like, fattier and, like, creamier. So if you're growing your own, you don't have to grow Haas. You can grow, like, you know, something more delicious. There's a bunch of crazy avocado. If you go to, like, a farmer's market in California in the summer, it's like they'll have, like, 10 different avocado varieties. There's even one called Bacon, which I don't know if that means it tastes like bacon, but it's, like, you know, it's called the Bacon avocado.
Nothing like that here. We had nothing like that on the East Coast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I'm an avocado fan too, so I'm going to have to check some of these out. That's awesome. Well, we're going to move on in a second, but because I know you listen to a lot of stuff, so Huberman Labs, are there any other, in terms of people want to look into that type of stuff, they enjoy the science type stuff, any other top podcasts you'd recommend?
I mean, I like Rich Roll. I mean, he's obviously a classic, and I think he's either vegan or vegetarian. So for me, that's always nice because he has all these like plant-based people on. But he gets some pretty interesting guests too. There's another one that's on, like, I think it's called like The Science of Ultra Running or something like that. I think that's what it's called. I don't know. It's all saved in my Spotify. You know, it's like,
yeah. Just hit play.
Really Huberman and then Rich Roll. I guess I like occasionally I'll go down like the Peter Attia. I like his stuff. I can't think of what his is called. Something Drive. I'd have to look at my phone and look at all of my lists. I literally listen to so many podcasts because if you imagine running 30 hours a week, I have a lot of time to try to like make myself smarter. So I try hard to do it.
Good deal. Well, I just wanted to give the audience a chance to plug into what Andy's plugging into. But all right, man, this is something I know you've talked about a lot, both before and after. But I mean, we got messages that were like, dude, you got to have Andy Glaze on because what is up with Coco Canyon? Right. And so let's talk about that. So I mentioned it in the intro. So Cocodona 250, the Canyons 100, which we've talked about the Canyons. I hear it's a beast. You're about to confirm or deny. How did that idea come about to combine those two efforts?
Well, so last year in October, I was supposed to fly to Mexico to run UTMB by Mexico or Mexico by UTMB, which is basically my favorite race in the world is UTMB. And they got bought out by Ironman and then they changed all their rules. And so now it's like an Ironman style race where you have to run UTMB races in order to get points. I think they call them points. And then in order to get those points, and then you can enter the lottery in order to run UTMB. So I had my UTMB race like lined up. It was this race in Mexico. I was at the airport. My wife and I were going down for a week. We had like this amazing hotel, everything lined up, and American Airlines screwed us, canceled our flight, couldn't get us down there like the race was Friday. We were flying out Wednesday and they couldn't get us down there till Sunday, they told us. And then we were supposed to come home on Monday. So basically my whole vacation got canceled. Like I didn't get my UTMB points, so I didn't get into UTMB. And so I was like, well, I got to get points for next year. And Canyons came up and it was like the only race around here that was UTMB that I could get my points. And so I was like, okay, I got to do that race. And so I signed up. And then at the same time, Cocodona came up and it was like the same time too. And so I was like, well, man, what am I going to do here? I really want to do UTMB. And I really want to do Cocodona because I'm one of the few people that have done Cocodona every year. So I'm like a legacy. You know, it's funny to think because like when we talked last time, I was just ramping up to run it for the first time. So I just sat down and started thinking. I started looking at it and I was like, well, I could do both. And I started looking at plane tickets and like started to go through all the logistics of like, was it even possible and how would I accomplish it? And basically just came to the conclusion that I could do it. I just would, it would, you know, just be really hard. So I mean, that's the origin is basically I wanted my cake and I wanted to eat it too. I wanted my UTMB points and I wanted to do Cocodona. And so, yeah. And then I just turned it into like a thing, you know, like I came up with a name for it. Like my buddy made me shirts. Like I did the whole thing and like, yeah, I mean, it turned into like this just giant event, you know, which everybody was able to watch me just for a week straight. Just everything I did for a week straight was on social media and I got it done. But it was just a hard two races. It's funny because I was playing for Canyons, which is in Auburn, California. And I had been watching the weather, you know, getting ready mentally for that race. And like the whole time I had like looked for it, it told me it was going to rain. And I was like, you know, and then you have Cocodona, which is like a desert race and it's like super hot. So I was like, you know, I'm packing for all this like you know, rain gear and all this stuff. And then also like, you know, my desert stuff. And a couple of days before the race, I was talking to my buddy who was also doing canyons, and he was like, man, it's going to be a hot one. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I had been looking at the weather for Auburn, Alabama. I don't know. I have no idea why when I put in Google Auburn weather and I'm in California, they gave me Auburn, Alabama. So in Auburn, Alabama, it was raining all week, but in Auburn, California, it was like 100 degrees. Luckily, I'd been doing all the like sauna work and everything for Cocodona, so it wasn't that bad, but I forget the exact statistics, but I think 65% of the people like dropped out just because, I mean, the weather was bad, the conditions were bad, like, you know, they ran out of ice, they ran out of all this stuff, and people were just like, we're not prepared for like 100 degree weather. It was just a weird freak 2 days of heat, and then it like mellowed back out. So it was great for me because it got me ready for Cocodona. But yeah, it took a lot out of me. I had to go real slow because it was just so hot and I wanted to complete it. So I just put my head down and grinded through it basically. I've run a lot of hot races, so I know what it feels like to run hot races, but that was a hot one for sure.
Just so you know, usually when people say, hey, I ran a hot race to prepare for a hot race, they're talking like weeks or months out. You ran a race Friday through Saturday to prepare for a race that started Monday. So, but let's talk about some of the details here in a second. I want people to really understand the logistics. So, just from a high level, man, you started Canyons on Friday. Talk us through that piece, getting to Cocodona. And kind of just high level what that week looked like.
So, I mean, the hard part is I had to have drop bags for canyons because the other like piece of this puzzle is that I did both races solo with no crew.
Of
Right.
course.
So Canyons, which was 100 and something miles with, I think it had 17 or 18,000 feet of vert. I had to have drop bags for that. And then I also had all my drop bags for Cocodona, which was way more extensive. I think I had like 11 or 12 drop bags and I had to bring it all with me. So I flew from Southern California to Sacramento and like Northern California, rented a car, drove to Auburn, checked into a hotel, did the whole initial things like Thursday night, check in and get my bib and all that stuff, drop off my drop bags, and then raced it in the morning. It took 28 hours. It was a hard one. Oh, and it was a late start because they wanted to make it extra hard. So they started us like late. And they knew it was going to be hot. And they made us carry all the like UTMB gear because they said it was a mountain race, even though I think the coolest it got, even in the middle of the night, was like 70 degrees. So I'm carrying like a big backpack with like a rain jacket and a space blanket and all this gear, total overkill. You know, sometimes I think you, as a race organizer, you make a command decision and go, you know, this doesn't make sense, but whatever. You know, I'm not a race director. So, race that, finished that, I think like 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that. So, you know, I raced the whole day. It was hot. Then I raced all night. And then I raced, you know, all morning into the hottest part of the day. So, I mean, that was pretty brutal. Then I literally like walked from the finish line to my car. I had some water bottles. I like cleaned myself off because that's all I had. So I basically gave myself a, you know, whatever you want to call it, there's a lot of slang terms for that, but basically, you know, wash myself in the parking lot because, you know, I'm filthy because I've been running in, you know, trails for 28 hours. Drove to the airport with all my bags and everything, then got on a plane, flew to Phoenix, got into Phoenix like 9 or 10 o'clock at night, got in an Uber, went to a hotel, spent the night. And like, I was so hungry, like, I had food delivered to the hotel. Like I was in the Uber finding something that was open and had it delivered to the hotel. So when I got to the hotel, like my food was waiting, ate, passed out, woke up, and then I had to like go to like the grocery store, get everything ready for my Cocodona drop bags, got them all ready. Then I had to take an Uber like an hour north to Black Canyon, drop off my drop bags. Then I Ubered back, got back at, you know, in the evening, ate dinner, and then like passed out and woke up and at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then had to be at an hour back to Black Canyon, took another Uber, and you know, the race started at like 5 a.m. So it was a lot. It was, you know, logistically that was, you know, a lot to do. And of course I did it all, you know, by myself, solo.
After running 100 miles, did you have a conversation on that plane ride between Canyons and Coconut? Because I can only imagine the person sitting next to you, one is like, what is with this guy?
Why does he smell
like what? Yeah, I mean,
no.
Oh, you did? Oh, man.
He slept.
That had to be the most, that would have been the most epic conversation for them to be like, oh my God, you ran 100 miles.
No,
wait, wait, you're going to do what? You're running 250 miles starting Monday? What?
Luckily, it was like a pretty dead plane. There wasn't very many people on it. And I didn't have anyone sitting next to me. I got most of the dirt off, but I was like, I put sweatpants on so people couldn't see my legs. And, but like so many things could have gone wrong, right? Like flights could have got delayed. They could have lost my luggage. Like, you know, I mean, just a lot of things could have gone wrong. So I was just really lucky and grateful that the things I couldn't control, like, worked out. You know, I was up for like 41 hours for the whole Canyons experience, mm-hmm. and then only slept a little bit. When you run 100 miles, like, everyone's like, oh, I bet the sleep's so good. And it's like, no, the sleep is freaking terrible because right. you're sore and you're starving and your body is like totally out of whack. So, you know, I didn't sleep well. And, you know, and then you're just like, so, like, I just had to put all these calories uh-huh. into myself, you know, to try to get some food back on board. And then, I started Cocodona, and then I was up for another 42 hours after that. So before I slept again. So it was, you know, it was a total shit show, like, especially Cocodona, like, man, those first 42 hours getting through everything was, you know, I think it's like the first 60 something miles of Cocodona is like one of the hardest 100 Ks I've ever done. It's brutal. There's a lot of climbing, and it's very hot and very exposed. So that race just punches you in the mouth right in the beginning.
So I'm interested because one of the things, here's another thing I like about the stuff that you share. It would be easy to assume that a lot of this stuff just comes easy to you, but you'll post about like, oh, everybody just assumes that I don't get anxious or that it's not, you know, that I don't have nerves before a race. And I love seeing that side of you. And I can only imagine with these two things kind of lined up. Tell me what it's like before a race. And why you think you feel the nerves?
I mean, I ever since I ran 5Ks, anything, I've always gotten super nervous before a race. I think before an ultra, it's worse because I know all the horrible things that can happen during a race that can end the race. And so, you know, it's the anxiety of knowing that it's so easy to fail. It's the anxiety of not knowing, you know, how my body is going to respond. Because, you know, sometimes I go out there and I feel like $1 million bucks. And sometimes I go out there and it's a slog for the whole time. And I always hope that I'm going to feel good, but I know that I probably won't. And then you mix in like tapering, which, you know, I know my taper isn't like a traditional taper, but I do reduce my mileage quite a bit before a big race. And so I'm not getting the needed miles to keep my anxiety and everything in check. And so I'm just like, my wife hates, she almost doesn't want me to race because of the taper week, because I'm just like, I have all this energy and I don't know what to do with it. And I'm like doing all these honey-do lists and getting everything done around the house because I just have like all this like pent up energy. But yeah, I get super, super nervous before races. Just, I get this weird dry heave cough. I'm just a wreck. And before this thing, I was a total wreck because I knew 350 miles in a week was going to really, really hurt. And I knew that I was going to go places that I'd never gone before. And, you know, anytime you peel that onion back and get deeper and deeper into the pain cave, it's like, yeah, it's like what you want, but it's also like, it's a lot to handle, you know? So, yeah, I took a big bite out of that onion during Coco Canyons. I'll tell you, I got real close to the core.
What did you find to be the hardest part then at that point?
The hardest part was just like staying awake. Physically, I felt okay, but like I was just so tired, like sleepy. Yeah, sometimes like, you know, I'd go lay down. They have like these like sleep stations. You know, I wouldn't want to get up. I just wanted to just keep sleeping, you know, and you can't like let yourself sleep too long. But like I remember, I think it was a Sedona, which is like, I don't know, maybe like 180 miles in. And like, I got in super late in the night and I laid down and I was like, you know, sleeping, and you're so sore and uncomfortable and you're in like on a cot. I got up and, you know, like you can barely walk because you're all sore now. And I like looked outside and it was like raining and I was all, you know what, fuck this. And I went back and slept for like another hour. I'm like, I'm not, yeah, I was like, I need another hour of sleep. So, and then after that, so I'd slept like 3 hours or something, you know, maybe not that long, I don't know. And I started off, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, it's dark. I would make it like every mile or two, I would have to like just lie down and sleep for like 10 minutes. Like
Wow.
I was so, even though I just slept, like my body was just so tired. Like during the day, I'd be okay, but like when it was dark out and you're out there by yourself, and just the last day too, the last night I was in Flagstaff, I think I only had like 30 miles to go or something, and I just could not stay awake. Like I would, again, I think it took me, I forget how many hours, but it was a several hours just to go 10 miles, because I just literally kept like falling asleep. And when I would get to the point where I would fall asleep, I just lay down on the dirt and just pass out. Set my alarm for like 10 minutes and then it goes off and I get up and I start moving again. With the 200 mile distance, everyone, oh, it should be so easy for you, man. Like I can't figure out the 200 mile distance. I've done three of them now, and every single time I get so, I just can't figure out the sleep. I don't know. I'll keep trying.
Impressive, super impressive.
I am curious, man. You talked about kind of the mental piece before and the mental training, different things. You just talked about how miserable or how tough it was. Those miles kept falling asleep. Did quitting ever become a consideration?
No, I mean, I just knew, I had plenty of time. I never felt stressed. Like I was never chasing cutoffs or anything like that. And I just knew, like, obviously I'd run the race two other times, so I, you know, that's a big advantage. And I knew what I needed to do, and I knew what was ahead of me, so I could like mentally prepare, like, again, breaking it up by aid stations. Although, you know, I've done it three times, all three times it's been a totally different race, but in general I knew what I was going to have to do. And I've gotten really comfortable with just like knowing that my body and my mind are going to like complain a bunch, and they're going to tell me that, you know, things hurt and things, you know, all those sort of aches and pains. I just like, I know that that's going to happen. And so it's not as hard for me anymore when it comes to that sort of stuff. I mean, it's still uncomfortable and I still suffer. And I, you know, I'm not like a huge fan, but like, it used to be like when I started to like, oh, my hip hurts or my knee hurts or my ankle hurts, like it would like trip me out and I would like start being like, well, am I injured? What, like, what's going on? But now I just know it's just my body just going through its like normal process of like trying to get me to quit. And 10 miles and my hip hurts, and then that totally goes away, and then it's my lower back, and then it's my ankles, and then it's, you know, it's just like my body just kind of goes through this cycle. And I'm like, I kind of am like, okay, so my ankles are hurting right now. Like, you know, we'll see in 10 miles where we're at, and then it'll be something else. And then eventually it just all kind of goes numb, and I don't, you know, I'm not in that pain anymore. So I just kind of trust the process that I've experienced so many times. Like I know what my body's going to
That's incredible.
do.
Like, I don't know how you do it. Like I think I would have probably freaked out during the canyons and decided I'm not doing Coco Done at this point. I'm ready to be done with everybody else who's dropping out of this race, and now I'm gonna fly and do Coco Donut. I don't see that happening.
Well, you
I
know, they
don't
say
know.
run ultras to like, you know, train for ultras. So I had
It's
quite a few
incredible.
races under my belt before Coco Canyons this year alone.
That's
So,
true.
you know, I had a lot of mental training and like, you know, pushing through. And, you know, not all my races this year have gone great. I mean, I've had some, you know, some slogs out there, and that's okay. Like, you
Yeah.
know, I mean, they can't all be wonderful, especially when you run as much as me and, you know, race as much as I do. You know, I'm not going out feeling fresh every time. You know, a lot of times I'm in the hurt box when I start. So,
When he starts.
right.
yeah.
So what about when you finish? Because I have heard you talk about, and you posted about, right? You're like, ah, oh, like I am wrecked and I love it. Like right after
Yeah.
a race,
What is it about? Because I'm the opposite, man. I'm like, oh my God, what did I do to myself? Right. I don't have the experience on my body that you do, and I haven't worked through it as many times as you have. But what do you like about that period afterwards where your body's just like, why did you do this to me?
I really like the feeling of being sore. You know, I mean, I like that feeling of being like real stiff, and like, I like the feeling of like being starving all the time and just eating and just like, and like, I feel like I can just be like so gluttonous and like, it's so nice, you know, like I can literally do whatever I want. I feel like, whereas like, you know, I'm very rigid before a race, I'm very scheduled. And then it's like after a race, I'm like, if I want to eat a whole cake right now, I can do it. It doesn't matter. You know, if I want to, you know, like I just let myself just like enjoy like everything. If I want to take a nap, like right now, I'm just going to like pass out on this couch and I can do it. And then I really like the feeling of running after like a big effort and just feeling like my legs can't move and like I'm so sore and every step hurts. Like, and I like pushing through that. Because after a mile or two, like my body loosens up and then all of a sudden I'm running at my 11-minute pace again or whatever. Like the first mile, probably 15-minute mile. Second mile, probably 13-minute mile. And then it just like something happens and the body starts like, okay, we can do this again. And I love that. I always say it's a reminder of like hard work. I did something really hard yesterday, you know, and I don't think in life we do enough like really hard things. Most of the reason is because it's like, we just can't do like super hard things all the time. Otherwise we would just like, who has the time for that? Or who has the energy for that? But like when we do something really difficult, it's nice to have a reminder, you know, and then it goes away and I'm sad. And then I just continue on, you know, and go, you know, run another race.
And so to be clear, because you don't take a day off, right? You're running the day, typically running the day after a big event, including Cocoa Canyon.
Yeah. What I like to do is like, it's normally about 10 hours after I finish, I try to run like 5 miles. And I've done that, I think almost ever since I first started doing hundreds. The first or second time I did Coca Dona, I tried and couldn't do it. Like I went out there and like I tried to run and like my legs just kind of buckled and I almost like fell to the ground and I was like, okay, we're gonna not do that right now. We're gonna sleep and then we'll do it in the morning. But I think that's one of the only times that I've ever like been like that. Cocoa Canyons, I finished it in the afternoon, and then the next morning I ran 5 miles or whatever. Then I flew home and then I ran a half marathon with my wife that next morning. So I got in, I don't know, like 8 o'clock at night, and then went to bed and woke up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, drove to Orange County, which is like a couple, like an hour and a half away. And then we ran a half marathon together.
That needs to be added to the name of Cocoa Canyon.
Yeah. It's like the Cocoa Canyons half marathon. Right. Or something. It was awesome though. Cause at Coca Dona, you know, like the people were still finishing the race and in the morning, and I went out like just in my little teeny shorts, no shirt on, and it's freezing cold out because it's like Flagstaff, and I ran my 5 miles and I ran past the like finish line, and I like all my friends that, you know, had finished, their own like parkas and like pants, and they're all shivering and like, you know, I'm like, hey guys, and they're like, you did not just go run. I'm like, yeah, just 5 miles, you know? So, you know, I know it's like part of the craziness, but it is what I like to do. So
I think I just heard a couple of listeners' heads pop.
I'm sure they, they were listening to that story. I think it's cool though. Like you've been running with your wife and everything too. The fact that you know, you come back and you pace her in the half. And I think when we talked to you the first time, I don't recall that she was running much at all at that point. So this is new with her, right? Not.
Yeah. She's done, I don't know how many half marathons now, but that's kind of like her sweet spot. But yeah, I think this year I've run, well, I did Cocoa Canyons, which is a 350, and then two other 100-mile races. And the next day ran a half marathon with her. I did the San Diego 100, and the next day did the San Diego half marathon with her. And then we had our local, I live in a city called Redlands, and we had a little local half marathon. I did Born to Run, in Santa Barbara and then drove home and ran the half marathon with her. So, yeah.
I think it's cool. Like I said, I knew that I didn't think she'd been running much with you before. And it's just been kind of cool to see that progression of even her becoming more involved in running with you and doing a lot of your biohacking that we see in the videos as well, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's come along stubbornly, but yeah, she loves, she loves the cold and hot. Like I think she loves it more than I do, but yeah, we're both super addicted to that.
That's fantastic.
It's awesome that you can do it together. And you mentioned Redlands, and this is a throwback, but I know the first time we had you on, I think I referenced LA as far as the firefighting stuff. And I remember like one of your buddies being like, LA, and you were like, yeah, they're, you know, the people not around here, it's all LA. So
yeah,
so I'll correct the record. It's Redlands, but
yeah, it's all good.
Sounds like LA to me.
So the first time we talked to you, we talked about this a little bit beforehand. First time we talked to you, I think you were somewhere around 3,000, 5,000 followers, something like that. When I look today on Instagram, we're talking Instagram, you're right at 100,000 followers. So your growth, which we'll take credit for,
of course,
but your growth
is, your guys. Yeah.
unfortunately, they don't follow us. They just follow you.
Right.
But your growth has been incredible. And I think part of it is the things you talked about, right? Mm-hmm. You being just authentic, putting out a lot of content. I think it's actually kind of refreshing that you're not giving advice. You're just, here's what Andy does. And you do some pretty funny stuff too.
Being himself.
Being yourself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On TikTok, man, you're like the TikTok star, 370,000-ish, something like that. It's pretty freaking amazing. what has that been like to be so, I guess, visible, to see that kind of growth?
It's a little, sometimes it's overwhelming. I mean, anywhere I go, people like recognize me and know me. I mean, no matter where I go in the world, like somebody will know who I am. But I mean, it's cool because all the people I'm touching are like runners and, yeah, you know, people I'm inspiring. And even though I'm like an ultra runner, I think I inspire a lot of people that are just like on the couch still and just like barely starting to run and using me as inspiration. And I love that probably even more. But yeah, I mean, it's weird because I'm just Andy, and like, you know, I follow a lot of running accounts, and like a lot of them give advice and coaching, and all I'm doing is just like posting just what I do. Like, it's not, you know, it's not advice. It's just like, you know, just me being Andy. And like, and so it's kind of weird because people are following me because they like me. And like, that's just bizarre. Cause I've always just done this. And so like now there's like platforms that support it. And I don't know how to articulate it more than that, but you know, when you go anywhere, my wife's always rolls her eyes, but it's like, I was literally flying to Istanbul and I was waiting to take a piss. And the two guys that were waiting to take a piss with me both followed me on social media. and it's like, do you know how weird that is? Like, you know, it's like, it's bizarre. And like, yeah, I mean, TikTok's crazy because it reaches like a whole new generation, the younger kids. I gotta have a lot of like, you know, cross country teams that follow me and stuff, and people that don't run like follow me. So like, I get a lot of people that just aren't runners, they just like are just consumers of TikTok, and like they know me. So, and then I get like famous people that know me, and you know, that's weird. Like I got a DM from Logan Paul, or no, Jake Paul, or one of the Pauls, you know, who are like, you know, again, I don't even really know who these people are. My son knew who they were. It's crazy. It's like, I'm just Andy, and I'm just making videos about running, and I've always sort of done that. So I don't know, man, it's overwhelming for sure. It's hard to manage too, cause I do it all myself. My wife told me like this week, she goes, I think, cause I was loosely like, maybe I should get an assistant to help me out. And then she was like, you need to get an assistant. I was like, oh, cause like a lot of my friends that are like, you know, like bigger influencers than me, they all have assistants that help them. And I, you know, I just do it all myself. So it's hard to like manage it all, you know, like even like scheduling podcasts and doing all this stuff is like, sometimes gets a little overwhelming. And then, you know, sometimes I won't remember to respond to a message, or, you know, cause I get hundreds of messages a day. So if I have a busy day and I can't respond, then the next day I get 102. So now I have 200 messages. And then like, you know, it can just like get crazy, or, you know, someone will be like, hey, I want to interview you, I want to do a podcast. I'm like, yeah, I want to do it. And then I forget to respond back. And then that message gets way to the bottom and I forget about it. And it's just, you know, I do my best, but it is hard at times.
Yeah, it's cool. My kids even knew who you are. So I told them when I was going to be recording with you tonight, and they're like, oh, we know Andy from TikTok. I was like, of course you do. Everybody knows Andy from TikTok.
Well, when I ran Bighorn, which is in Wyoming.
Yeah.
And it's in a very like small, like town, like sort of like Western feel like town. And all the aid stations are like these amazing aid stations. And it's all like people from the community of Sheridan, like that are like volunteering. They're all old people. And like, I think four times they were like, my son in, you know, at college needs a picture with you. Like, and like literally took a picture with me. Like they didn't know who I was, but like their son or daughter had told them, he's running this race, you need to take a picture with him. That happens a lot. Like the old people don't know who I am, but their kids like know who I am. So that's
fantastic.
What's so cool about it is that, well, I think it's one of the things you hit on, right? Is that you're not a running account. I don't think people follow you because you're a running account. Because of that, you reach people, a lot of people that are not runners, which is why I think you're influencing so many people. However, I would imagine, and I've seen some of the interactions, I would imagine along with that, it comes some of the trolls and the negativity and people that don't understand. What has that side of it been like? You seem to not be fazed by it too much.
Yeah, I don't get, I mean, I get a lot of hate, a lot of hate. Normally not as much on Instagram, but like a lot on TikTok, because like the algorithm is shooting my video to a lot of non-runners and just people watching videos. I mean, if you think about what, if you watch TikTok, you'll go from like a zit popping video to like, you know, like a husband and wife fighting to like the cops tasing somebody. I mean, it's like, it's all over the place. So I get a lot of just random people watching my video that have never heard of a 100-mile race or never heard of like anything like that. So I get a lot more hate on that, but I always say it's like, it's great for the algorithm, because if people start arguing and talking shit on your video, it's like the fastest way for it to go viral. So on TikTok, it's like every time I post a video, it's like 15-year-old kids arguing about, he's like Goggins. No, he's not. Goggins is way tougher than him. No, he's tougher than Goggins. No, Goggins carries the logs. No, Andy carries the boats. Like, it's like literally this crazy, like, I'm always compared to Goggins, and I'm like, guys, I'm not Goggins. Goggins is amazing, like whatever, like, but it's just these people just fight, and then they're like, next thing I know, my video has like 10 million views, you know. So, it doesn't really. I post it sometimes on Instagram because I want like normal people to know. Not that I'm not a normal person, but like the average runner who's not doing 100-mile weeks to know. To just let it go. Like if people talk shit about you, people are always going to tell you that running is bad for you. Running is bad for your knees. Running is this, running is that. You shouldn't run, you know, and you just got to like, let them talk and then ignore them. And so, you know, I try to just show people that it's like, it's pretty easy to do that. Plus, you know, it's always fun to see my followers, like, you know, go after some troll, you know, that's always fun. And I, you know, I'm a type A personality, you know, I'm a firefighter and like, you know, I'm not like some like pacifist hippie. So like, I have no problem, like, you know, giving it right back to them. Like I'm not scared to argue and I'm not scared to, you know, talk shit back. So as positive as I am, like, you know, don't test me.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, man. Well, look, so that means we have to fight on social media.
to try to get our videos going.
Yes.
Who do we want to fight?
Well, you know what they say is like a lot of the like big influencer accounts, they have like separate accounts that go in and troll their videos. And it's really them started. Trolling it to, because they'll start arguments because it'll make their videos go more viral. So
that's sneaky.
You know, I'm gonna start going on your videos and be like, I feel sorry for your knees.
Like Andy says. Sorry. But you have too many followers, they'll destroy us. That will not be good. That's awesome.
Well, look, man, this has been so fun. It really is. Old friends catching up. I had to like keep challenging myself, like, okay, let's make sure we get some tactical stuff, dude, because I could just sit here and talk to you. I know you've got a couple big events coming up. You talked about UTMB that you're going to be focused on, but then Moab, right? You got Moab 240.
Yeah, Moab. Yeah. Yeah. I got real lucky. So because I did Canyons, they actually let me into UTMB this year, even though I wasn't like supposed to race it. So I was like a win-win. So I did Canyons, and then I got an email being like, you did so well at Canyons, we're going to let you into UTMB. So I was like, I didn't do well at Canyons. I'm like the only person that finished. So,
which means you did well. Hey, yeah. But you did run 250-mile cool down. So
yes, I did.
That should account for something.
A heck of a recovery run.
Well, look, if you're listening, as always, I'm just going to say we're so thankful for it. If you're finding the value, you share with your friends. You know, do all that good stuff. But the chances that you're not following Andy, if you're listening to us, is pretty darn slim. But it's AM Glaze, at AM Glaze on Instagram. I don't have TikTok, so I'm assuming it's...
We do have TikTok.
It's Glaze Runs.
I don't. So
because Glaze Runs.
Yeah, because AM Glaze was taken.
So. But you've got all kinds of links. In fact, you've actually got one right now. So we're recording this, something close to your heart. We don't have to go into it too much, but go check out your links. You had a fundraiser kind of at the top there.
Oh, they should definitely check that out.
Yeah. So go check out Andy's links, check out the stuff. If you're listening, you follow, you probably already know all about that, but dude, it's just been such a good time. We're going to keep you around because we're going to do something for Patreon, which is a fun part for us. But thank you, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Of course, man. Sounds good. Let's do something for Patreon.
All right.
There you go.
All right.
Talking about.
And to everybody else, we'll be talking soon.
Cut.
Join the Patreon so you can hear this exclusive content.
There you go. Yeah. So much.
We need you to share that on your account. All we need is like 1%.
Then we can retire.
All right. That's seriously. Funny. And cut.
Okay. When is this episode coming out?
2 weeks from Saturday. I did not write it down. So whatever 2 weeks from Saturday is.
And then over time, like you'll see. Oh, hold on. My dog just jumped up on me.
He's going to do his introduction. We'll get going.
All right.
And all of a sudden, I'm like a mind blank. Like, what? How's our introduction going?
You too busy
just like having a good time.
I don't watch TV. No, I actually get anxiety now if I look at a TV.
Really?
It's like, yeah, if you detox from TV for like many years, it's like a pretty weird sensation to look at one.
And when you say an old man, let's be honest, you're what, 45, I think?
Sorry, my mom was calling me.
So we've already ruined half our content, just so you know, but we'll go anyway.
This is the part you add to the Patreon section.
That's it's like right.
The unedited version.
We almost invited your wife to be the guest instead of you because we figured she could give us the real story of Andy Glaze.
You should. That would be her first podcast too. We're going to an Eagles cover band tonight, so I'm not sure if we're going to eat out beforehand or not.
Nice.
Babe, what's for dinner? Meatloaf?
Meatloaf. Ma! Meatloaf!
Tell Lauren we appreciate it, and as soon as she starts hitting that 50k, she's on the show.
All right, sounds good.
See you, man. Have a good one.
Bye.
All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run, but really we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you, and the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up
clean.